You are Locked On Wolverines, your daily podcast on the Michigan Wolverines, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's Wednesday, and honestly, there's not a lot going on right now. Locked On Wolverines podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. I am your man on the ground, Isaiah Hull, publisher of Wolverines Wire through USA Today Sports Media Group. We are going to start off with a little basketball talk, probably not for that long, because I don't know that I have that much to say when it comes to basketball, but there's some certainly great news coming out of Ann Arbor today, so we'll start out with that, and then we'll talk about ESPN's FPI, the expectations for Michigan going forward for the rest of the season. It just keeps getting adjusted, and it's getting adjusted worse and worse as the season goes on, and we'll see where we go from there. I'm sure something will come out of that, because again, I don't have a lot to say right now in terms of where Michigan stands going into this Wisconsin game. Anyway, let's get into it. So Michigan got some great news on Wednesday morning. Honestly, I'm surprised. I did not expect this to happen. Michigan got both of its five-star commitments to sign their national letter of intent on the first day of early signing day. So that is huge, because I wouldn't have been surprised if one of them had signed. I didn't think if it happened, it would happen right away. And this is per Josh Henschke, my former colleague over at 24/7 Sports, Michigan Insider. I mean, he's still a colleague, just we're not in the same house anymore like we were. He reported that both had signed their letters of intent. Musa Diabate, who just committed on Monday, and Caleb Houston. So, I mean, that's just giant, especially considering what happened over the summer, all the expectations that Michigan was going to finish with Isaiah Todd and Josh Christopher, all the crystal balls in for Josh Christopher, only for him to pick Arizona State, and then Isaiah Todd like, a day or two later, decommitting and going with the G League. Now, the one thing I'm not 100% on, and this is just my own personal ignorance, is I don't know, with the national letter of intent being signed, if you can still say, you know what, I'm out, I'm going overseas, I'm going to the G League or whatever. But I don't know. Like, that's me literally saying I don't know the ins and outs of how binding that is. But it seems like things are pretty much locked up for both of them. So Michigan right now has the number one class in the Big Ten. Not just the Big Ten, in the country. Number one class in the country right now in basketball. They could obviously move down because Florida State's knocking on that door right now with four commits. They get a couple more high-level commits, they can move up there. One of two teams that has more than more than one five-star committed. Kentucky's got three commits at the number three spot. They're only a couple points behind as well. They have one five-star and two four-stars committed. Michigan State and Baylor are also right there. Michigan State's got one five-star and two. Both of them have one five-star and two four-stars committed. They're right behind. Right. And then you look at like Duke, the only other school that has any, you know, more than one five star committed. They're at number 27 right now, but they only have two commits and both of them are five stars. So when you look at the rest of the player rankings, I mean, there's a lot of players out there that are uncommitted. Patrick Baldwin, the number one player in the country, according to 24/7 Sports Composite, is expected to pick Duke. Chet Holmgren, who Michigan was in after, the center, he had Michigan in his top five. He's still out there. Lots of other guys, Jaden Hardy, rather. The combo guard is 50% expected to either go to Kentucky or to go pro. Hunter Salas, the number seven prospect in the country, 100% expected to go to Kentucky. So there's still some ways to go before it's all said and done, right? Like, there's still plenty of guys out there. I think the thing that's still surprising as I look at the five-star list here is that Michigan went out and got Musa Diabate from IMG Academy, right? And he wasn't even the one from IMG that was a five-star that I expected, right? Efton Reed is the five-star that's at IMG Academy, the center. I thought he had a really good shot to end up in this class. There's another one out there. I can't remember his name offhand. He's not a five-star in the composite anymore, but what's his name? Bediako, I think is his name. He's the one that I thought was going to be happening. If you hear the microphone get bumped, it's because my voice gets lower. It's because Zuri just climbed on my lap. Because she is also amped up about Michigan basketball right now. So, as my roommate Matt Leach, it's his birthday today. He said he got the best birthday present that he could expect, getting the two guys to sign. So, huge deal for Michigan to be able to get those guys in the fold. Saadi Washington right now, the number three recruiter in the country. Howard Eisley, not too far behind him at number nine. So, pretty good showing for the Wolverines so far. The funny thing is, here's Bediako, number 23. So Efton Reed and Bediako are right back-to-back from each other. I would assume that Michigan's done with the six commitments. I mean, I don't know enough about their scholarship situation, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you sit there and you plan for some attrition and you think maybe you add a seventh in the class. But I mean, six guys, 2 5-stars, 3 4-stars, and a 3-star. I mean, that's pretty solid. Will Shetter is also signed his, went ahead and signed his letter of intent. Frankie Collins, I believe, is expected to do it later. I can't remember which one. Is Isaiah Barnes is signing on Friday, I believe. I wrote it all on Wolverine's Wire. You can check it out there. My memory already failing me this early. But huge for Juwan Howard. I mean, obviously, this guy can go out there and recruit. And it's great to see him close on this. So no matter kind of what happens this year, you at least feel really good next year because you've got so many guys, right? I mean, not only this class right now, I mean, Hunter Dickinson, you feel really excited about him. One of the things I remember Pep Hamilton told me when I saw him back in February was he went to a game and saw Terrence Williams play, and he's like, Michigan basketball's got a really good one. Because you keep in mind, Pep was about ready to coach the DC Defenders. So he was like, now I'm out there in the neighborhood, see that there's a Michigan commit, I'm going to go check him out. And he was like, yeah, that ended up being pretty good to see this guy up close and personal. So there's a lot to really, really be excited about when it comes to Michigan. And breaking news right now that doesn't affect Michigan at the moment, but it could affect Ohio State. Maryland, Ohio State has been canceled due to COVID-19 issues at Maryland. So Ohio State's got a week off, as does Maryland after all of their what have you. So that just happened. All right, let's get to Michigan FPI here in a moment, and then we will continue talking about just kind of whatever's on my mind coming out of that. Because like I said, I don't have a lot to talk about. You know, we're just kind of in the doldrums here. So do you ever feel like you're always on? I certainly don't today, but you know, what do you do when you need a moment to chill? How would you like to hit that reset button, get ready for what's next? These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nothing but nonstop hustle all the time. Well, with work, friends, family, a million pressing social issues, and an expectation beyond 24/7, sometimes you just need a moment to turn it off, hit the reset button. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. Only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. You know, the Blue Mountains. You know, I don't drink anymore, but when I did, Coors Light ever since 2003, when I was 21, almost 22, 4th of July, I reached for that six-pack of Coors Light, and ever since then, that was my light beer of choice. It's a true story, actually. Coors Light wants you to know that no matter what sport is on this fall, Saturdays are your time to chill. Even if your team isn't playing because there's COVID issues, you know, there's still plenty of teams and sports on TV that can give you an excuse to chill and drink a beer. Or if, you know, your team, Michigan, is playing and it doesn't look good, grab that beer. Doesn't matter what team or sport's playing. Coors Light is the official beer of watching any sport or team just to drink beer. So flip through the channels, find a game, crack open a Coors Light. Coors Light is the one that I used to choose when I needed to unwind, so when you need to hit that reset button, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the brand new look delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Now, there's one other thing that I do need to tell you about, and that's Built Bar. Y'all know how much I love Built Bar. Built Bar is it's a protein bar that's low calorie, high protein, low carbs. Absolutely fantastic tasting. It's one of the best, if not the best, out there. I'm telling you, if you haven't made the jump, I put my money where my mouth is. I've bought 5 or 6 boxes now. I've lost count at this point. I'm going to buy another one here in the next day or two, probably. And I'm telling you, delicious. The almond coconut tastes like an almond joy. I absolutely love it. The strawberry one, which was a limited time edition one from the month of October. I wish they'd keep that going because it's just unbelievable. As I think I mentioned earlier, my roommate ate all of them. Didn't ask. Just went ahead and ate all of them. And then was like, hey, why do they not have strawberry available? I'm like, because they're sold out, man. Oh, they were incredible. I know they were incredible. That's why I bought them. Go to BuiltBar.com, put in promo code LOCKEDON, get 20% off of your next order. Again, BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON, 20% off of your next order. All right, that's all the reading and talking about stuff that I got there. So Michigan and the FPI. FPI has been mostly accurate in the week by week. Michigan wasn't given, actually, Indiana was the choice, according to the Advanced Analytics, ESPN, FBI, to win this last week's game. Michigan's win probability last week was 43.2. Obviously, Michigan lost. But when you look at the rest of the schedule, Michigan has 5 games left, hosting Wisconsin, going to Rutgers, and I just booked my flight to Rutgers, tropical New Jersey. For that game, Penn State, Maryland, Ohio State. Things haven't changed as far as win-loss, which is kind of surprising to some degree, but some of those percentages are definitely going down. I'm surprised that Maryland is still the most winnable game on that schedule, given what they just did to Penn State. But Maryland right now, it was 93.3 a week ago, the percentage. But it's considered Michigan's most winnable game at 82.4%. The next one is Rutgers in 2 weeks. That's all the way down to 69.7%. Where was that a couple weeks ago? Or a week ago? 78.3%. I mean, I think Michigan's going to beat Rutgers, right? I mean, you hope. The other ones, they're all saying are losses. Now, Wisconsin, if you check out the Badgers, Lockdown Badgers podcast, I said I have no idea what to expect from Wisconsin, because right, they're coming in with a bunch of guys who haven't played. Today's the first day that Graham Mertz can practice, and Asher, colleague over there and at Badgers Wire, said like he's not even 100% sure that Graham Mertz is necessarily going to be the guy. Could be Danny Vandenboom. Sounds like Chase Wolf is out regardless due to the timing of his COVID positive. Michigan was considered a 27.3% chance to win after week one, 16.9. The loss to Michigan State, now it's all the way down to 12.7. So FBI is still really high on Wisconsin regardless. The one that I'm really surprised about is Penn State. Penn State is still not considered a likely win for Michigan. It's gone up. Michigan's win probability went from 44.3% after week one down to 31.3%. The winless Nittany Lions coming to town. Michigan still got a 45.7% chance to win. And then, of course, Ohio State is 7.6%. Like, that's, no one's expecting that. But when you look at Penn State, you look at their schedule, it doesn't get any easier, right? like, okay, battle of the beatens, not the unbeatens, but the beatens. Nebraska at Nebraska at noon. Penn State might be broken, right? Nebraska is just Nebraska. Maybe Nebraska pulls that one out. No one expected, like, before you sit there and scoff at it, no one expected Maryland to come out and trounce Penn State. But they did. I think that's a winnable game for Nebraska. Then you got Iowa, who was winless going into last week and then destroyed Michigan State. Penn State comes to Michigan. Then they go to Rutgers, and then they host MSU. Penn State very well could end up winless. I don't think they will. I think they'll get a win. But when you look at what Penn State and Michigan are doing, Penn State looks way more rudderless, right? Like, yeah, they put up a decent fight in the second half against Ohio State, but by that point, that game was over. And that they were going to put up their best fight, but they clearly had given up after that. Maybe that's what happened with Michigan against Indiana, but here's the difference. Maryland and Indiana clearly are not the same teams. Indiana's has been playing really well already. So I don't know what to make of Penn State. I have no idea. I just think that's probably actually the most winnable game for Michigan going forward. Ohio State, Wolverines win probability actually went up in that game, believe it or not. Don't ask me how, but it went from 6.4 to 7.6. So, when you look at what Michigan's, everything here, the strength of schedule remaining rank for Michigan is number one in the country. Michigan has the toughest schedule left. Yikes. As far as FPI, they're sitting at 9.9. They're ranked 28th in the country. So, chance of winning out, 0.1%. Chance of winning conference, 0%. Makes sense. Strength of record so far, 56.7. Rank of 60. And you go from there. They've got the 21st ranked offense and 78th ranked defense, 72nd special teams. Overall, FPI has Michigan ranked at 49. Not good. Not good at all. I wish I could easily click over to the Penn State FBI, but it won't let me because I'm kind of curious about where they sit. But it's not letting me do that. Anyhow, that's that. Let's continue. I'm going to talk a little bit about players in the sense of we talked to Sharone Moore today. Seeing a lot of vitriol for Eric Aull. I understand why people are upset with him, but I'm just going to get into it here in a moment. Don Brown always says, you know, you blame the old guy. Leave the kids alone. Well, I think that's probably should be true of a guy like Eric Aull, who is getting his first real playing time, right? I didn't look at his overall snaps, but, I mean, he only had one reception last year out of three targets last year, and one reception for 10 yards. He's got 12 targets so far this year, 5 receptions, 4 drops, leads the Big Ten in drops. It's not good, right? But let's keep in mind this is a guy getting his first playing time. I think part of the problem is, yeah, the Michigan staff had been sitting there saying, listen, he's got great hands. He's got the best hands on the team. And then he leads the team in drops. He leads the conference in drops. I mean, that's hard to reconcile, of course. But for as bad as things have been, honestly, like if a couple little things go your way, and that includes Eric Aull, like, you know, making that third down catch last week, or, you know, maybe those interceptions from Joe Milton don't happen and they score, cut the game to 3 points. Who knows what happens there, right? You know, you give up one less deep bomb to Michigan State. Who knows what happens there? That's the thing to always remember with football, is sometimes those little plays make a big difference. I had been told that the way the staff saw these last two Ohio State games is a matter of just a handful of plays going bad. And I think that's true. Michigan has been really inconsistent for years in that light. And that's something that you want to see change under Jim Harbaugh, and it hasn't. That type of accountability, they haven't had that yet. Because when you see Ohio State, they don't make mountains of mistakes. But I think people need to keep in mind this is a young team. You know, no matter what happens, whether Harbaugh finishes out, you know, I mean, he's going to finish out the year, but Harbaugh, you know, finishes out his contract, he is extended, or Michigan moves in a completely different direction. No matter what happens, this is a really young team right now. And while I've been on the record and I still contend, youth is no longer an excuse in today's college football, it's still, you know, there still is a difference between a veteran-laden team and a youthful team. And I think that because Michigan isn't like Alabama, it didn't, like, you look at the 2018 Alabama team that trotted out, or 2017, when they won against Georgia, they trotted out all these freshmen, Tua Tagovailoa, the offensive line, we got to see the start of Jerry Jeudy and some of those guys. I mean, listen, you had a lot of youth, but you also had a lot of five stars. Michigan has got some people who are slightly more developmental. Eric All is among them. They're really excited about him, and I understand why people are angry at him, but I hate going into my mentions and seeing the vitriol that's being pushed towards a 18, 19-year-old kid. He's going to get there, right? A couple games. Like, yeah, he had the drop against Minnesota. He kind of rebounded after that. He had the drops against Michigan State and had the drop against Indiana. We all should know better that, yeah, it's bad in the moment, but, you know, a couple, you know, early career games don't make your career. I remember having a conversation with Channing Stribling after the 2016 season when he was headed, to the NFL draft. Didn't get drafted. I mean, he's still trying to find his path. He was just in the XFL. Right now he's in the Spring League. But I remember talking to him, and he was like, I'll never forget those fans that were writing me death threats after that Penn State game, the Allen Robinson game, 2014. He's like, I remember when I see those same fans come at me and say, like, you know, I love you, you're so great, and everything like that. And he's like, it's hard to reconcile. Picture yourself being a 17, 18, 19-year-old kid, and you're on a national stage. Now, when you come to Michigan, you're asking to be on the national stage. But the thing is your mistakes are amplified 1,000 times what they are in your real life. So, yeah, things have fallen apart for Michigan, but when it comes to the players, be patient. They haven't exactly been put in a position to succeed so far. We've talked about the coaching and all of that. So let's see where they go from here. Because now it's time for them to figure it out and hopefully piece it together. If the coaches can figure out how to try to not be Enron-style geniuses, things could go a lot better for them. I think it will. Whether that equates to wins, we've talked about FBI already. You hope that Michigan ends up winning more than 3 games this season, which is what FPI is predicting. At this moment, I would say 4, because I'll throw Penn State in there. Maybe 5 if they get Wisconsin. But nonetheless, sometimes teams need room to grow. And one of the things that I meant to say on the podcast yesterday when talking about Jim Harbaugh, maybe it was the day before, and I didn't mention it. I think it was the day before. It was Monday. I want everyone to think back to 2016 in Penn State. After Penn State came to Michigan, James Franklin was considered as good as gone. As good as gone. What happened the next week? Overtime with Minnesota, right? Then they beat Ohio State on their way to a Big Ten championship. Now, it is different because one of their losses was a non-conference game to Pittsburgh. But, well, they had a Maryland game in there too. But imagine if Michigan wins against Wisconsin, that'll give them a lot of momentum to go forward to that Ohio State game. So just because, you know, you lose a three-point game and then get blown out, in Penn State's case, 2 weeks later, because they beat Temple in the interim, doesn't mean everything is bad, fully bad. Michigan's played like a bad team. It's looked like a bad team. It might be a bad team. But there's a reason why you play the games. So just I implore people, especially with two losses under the belt, take a big picture look. See what happens on week-to-week basis. See where the team does good, what it does bad, and hope that it can be building blocks. Was for Penn State in 2016. After that Ohio State game, they went to Purdue and trounced them. Then they trounced Iowa, same Iowa team that beat Michigan a week later. Beat Indiana, shut out Rutgers, destroyed Michigan State, beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. Not saying that Michigan's going to follow the same trajectory, but no one would have thought James Franklin would have even gotten to that Ohio State game. And if they lost to Minnesota in overtime, he probably wouldn't have. And guess what? He's still there. All right, that's it. Managed to have 27 minutes, essentially, of talk here. So, cool. Anyway, that'll do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow for the mailbag. Reminds me, I need to ask for mailbag questions on Twitter. So get your questions in when I make the call for it here. It will be up by the time you listen to this. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.